Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinston, and this is episode 15. What a beautiful day! Initially, this podcast was going to go out next week after the Flink, but I've interviewed two people this week. On Monday, I spent an interesting hour or so with Debs Martin-Consani, and her interview, which I think you'll find really, really interesting, because Debs is someone who has been running ultra running for the last 4 or 5 years and has gone from just over 30 hours in her very first West Highland Way, even though there were circumstances which you'll hear about. But last year she ran it in well under 20 hours in 1957, something I think. So anyway, really good interview with Debs, which I thought would be really helpful, and that lasts almost an hour. And then last night I met with Colin for our regular updates on his training, and that lasts about 15 minutes. And initially I thought I would put some things on from the Fling over the weekend and then put it together, but I got a feeling that I might get some good material over the Fling. I'll try and interview a few people, maybe before, certainly after the race, and we could have a bit of a Fling special afterwards. So I thought, well, I might as well get it up and out now. And the advantage being that is if I can get it on the site, it's Thursday today, if I can get it on by tonight or tomorrow morning, then maybe folks would like to download it and listen to it if they do that sort of thing, actually, on the race on Saturday. So basically this is coming a few days early, and it's a great interview with Debs, and then another good interview with Colin, and I hope you enjoy both of them. It was on the 5th of November when the time it went back. But some say that that's impossible, but you and I would never look back. Well, it's a great privilege to have Debbie Martin-Consani with us today, and I've been really looking forward to doing this interview and finding out a bit more from Debs. I remember the first time I met Debs on a training run. I don't know if you remember that, Debs, when we met at Mulgai, yes, and we ran to Drimmen and back, and I think it's fair to say you struggled a bit, didn't you? That was my impression.
Oh, it was freezing.
It was a cold day.
Crying my eyes.
That's right.
Out.
You weren't too happy.
Yeah.
But when I look over this last 4 or 5 years, where you were and where you've come to, I think it's a great story and it's a great inspiration to lots of people. So great to have you, Debs. And if maybe we could start by just giving us a little bit of background to your running, what you did, and then how you got into ultra running.
Okay. I started running 10 years ago for the Glasgow Women's 10K, which is quite an iconic race in the area. A couple of girls at work were doing it, and I thought, well, you know what, I'll give it a shot. I quickly caught the running bug, moved on to half marathons, did a couple of marathons, and then I joined Garscoop Harriers. I think I'd done about 5 marathons, and I started dating Marco. And I stupidly sent him an email one day with a link to the Devil of the Highlands with the subject title, "We Can Run Marathons, How Hard Can This Be?" How wrong could I have been? It was fine, it was a great race, but it was torture. And towards the end of the race, that was my first ultra, I swore blind I would never even consider running the full West Highland Way. But I think most people who run ultras know they quickly forget, and we signed up for the first West Highland Way in 2008.
Yep.
That was the first year, yeah.
Yep.
And I think I've done, I don't know, how many ultras have I done, John?
Yeah.
Quite a few.
We'll come on to those. So that first race that you did, I think you did very well, didn't you? You didn't just struggle through it, but you had a good run. But it's actually your fault rather than Marco's. It was you that started.
With the ultras. I sent Marco the email saying, let's just do this.
Right.
And we turned up. I did one training run on the West Highland Way and was absolutely broken for weeks after it. But I really enjoyed the race. I loved the whole camaraderie of the race. Everything about it was just fabulous. Yeah. And I don't even think I could go back to running marathons. I think when I speak to people about ultra running, it's a bit crazy to say, but I think I'm too lazy to run marathons now. It's all a bit eyeballs out and frantic for me, so I think I'll stick with the ultras for now.
Okay, so that first race in 2008, again, I remember we did a number of training sessions together and as a group. And I remember I was saying that you, I felt you were definitely capable of going under 24 hours. And I think that was one of your goals, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So just tell us what happened on that first race.
Well, my race story is probably wildly different from most people's. Everything was going fine up until I got to Tynedrum and my knees were just knackered. I walked to Bridge of Orkney, came into Bridge of Orkney, went up to Victoria Bridge and just realised that I was just going to have to walk the whole way in. Mm. So walking 43 miles, it's really, really tough. It was a real struggle. My support crew were amazing. At no point did they ever tell me to quit. I think they knew that I was absolutely going to thrash it no matter what. And I was going across Larrimore with Sharon and I was in tears and she was in tears. And it was just awful. Everything about it was awful. And then a few days later, I realised that why everything was going so horribly wrong was I was actually 10 weeks pregnant at the time. So my son is the youngest ever West Highland Way finisher, even if he was carried.
Yeah. And I remember, I think you put a post on Facebook, didn't you, with a picture of...
Yeah, my scan picture on my blog, and my phone just went red hot for the whole night.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell anyone I was, well, suspected I was pregnant until I went for my scan, because even I didn't believe it, because I had absolutely no symptoms at all. Mm-hmm. And so of course the first person I told was my mum, and I showed her my scan and she was looking at it to say, why are you swimming with this? And I was like, it's baby Kinsani. And her first words were, you did that bloody race. But Cairn's okay. Yeah, he runs a lot, but I don't think he suffered any side effects for his mother's mental running.
So obviously the next year you couldn't run the race because Cairn was born in the January.
Yes.
Yeah. So that next year Marco ran the race and you supported, is that right?
Yes.
So maybe tell us a little bit about what it was like being a support to Marco.
It's different. It's different. It's really hard work doing support. I think Marco was running really well up until, I can't remember where it started to go horribly wrong. He probably shouldn't have done the race at all, because the three of us had been violently ill the week before. But I think he just really wanted to do the race and give it a shot. And he'd, up until that point, he'd never DNF'd the race. He should have, but he didn't. And I had to go and find him on Larrigmuir, and he was falling to bits. And I walked with him to Fort William, and I kind of felt for Sharon, probably had to do it 10 times worse when she was walking with me. But it's really hard when you're supporting someone and they're really, really struggling, especially going through the forests after Llandavera, because I was absolutely petrified of the dark. And I think it's because I hadn't slept for like two nights as well, so I practically dragged Marco through that, and he was whimpering because he was in so much pain. And I think it was generally awful for both of us.
Yeah.
But it's tough. I think it is tough on support, but it's also really good. It's also really good fun.
Is it harder, do you think, having someone that you love doing it? I suppose you're always going to have, you know, it's always going to be a friend, isn't it?
Yeah.
Normally. But is it even harder when it's a partner, when it's your husband?
I think it's probably harder for the person on support, because I'm more likely to get the wrath of a struggling runner, whereas you're probably not going to speak to your friends the same way as you would speak to your spouse.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's... I think regardless of who you're supporting, if they're struggling and there's nothing really that you can do to help, and you know, especially if they're going through a really bad patch, and regardless of how you know that if it's a bad patch, it's not going to last long. It's tough. It's tough. I'm sure Katrina would tell you the same thing, and I'm sure you'll be telling Katrina the same thing when she turns her hand to it.
Good. Okay. Well, that's a good tip then, and it's just trying to find that support, isn't it, and that balance between helping people achieve their goals. And I'm sure both for Sharon, when that first year for you, and then you with Marco, I think you both knew, but they both knew that you wanted to finish, and they do everything they can to help you, don't they, really?
Yeah, think, Scott, because at that point I was, you know, this was my one and only shot at doing the West Highland Way. I was never going to go back. I couldn't understand why anyone would do it year after year. I mean, obviously the twins are going for their 10th year, and even now I can't understand why they're going for 10 years. But at that point, I only ever wanted to do it once. Right. I'm sure it's the same as people who've never run a marathon. They only want to do one marathon. That's why I want to finish it. And, you know, I take my hat off to people that go out knowing that they're going to take 30 hours, because going from 30 hours to 19 hours, I can tell you which one is easier by far. You know yourself, the faster one, when things are going right, it's always the easiest. But I think, you know, people struggling on, I find, you know, it's really brave and it's really inspiring, but sometimes I think it's just as brave and inspiring to know when to call it a day. I would never go through what I did in that first year again. It was just, in hindsight, it was really silly, but but hey,
You
we live and learn,
that's right.
Or we live.
So the following year then, 2010, you came back, Cairn was one of the bits, and you decided to do the race again. And I think you must have one of the best improvements, wasn't you, from over 30 hours to just over 20 hours. So how was that second, the second race?
Cairn was just over a year, and I went to do it in 2010. I'd pretty much go back into running as soon as Cairn was born. I went to do the Devils that year again in August, and I think I surprised myself and everyone when I just got over 7 hours. Cairn was just 6 months old.
Didn't you have a fall as well?
That was a year after. So I just got, I think it was like 7, 8 or something. So, and Cairn was 6 months old. I think it was more to do with the fact that I was still breastfeeding and had to get to 4 million quickly. So I did that. And then I'd obviously signed up for the West Ham Way the year after.
Actually, I think that's a very special race, that one. I think it's the last time I beat you.
Did you beat me that
day? I did, yes. I was just under 7 hours.
Well done, you beat a breastfeeding woman.
Yeah, I had a flex. But that was the last time.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. And then I did the Fling in the April. We just moved house, so I really wasn't as prepared as I'd like to be, but it actually came out well. And then I went to do West Ham Way in June, and I got just under 21 hours, 20-something. We don't say under 21, do we? We say 20
that's
hours.
That's right, definitely.
20 hours.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was also really good to get a 10-hour PB. Yeah. I'm not sure I'll ever get a 10-hour PB again. But yeah, it just kind of came together in a day. It was a hot day that year. It was quite windy as well. But do you know what? I don't really remember a whole thing about that race. It was just... It was better, let's put it that way.
I think when I looked at what you did, I think that was a transition year in a sense. You know, after Cairn's birth and then getting back into it. But I'd love to talk about a little bit about last year, because I think that was just a spectacular year for you. 2011 really was. The races you did and the way that you went, you got through them. So maybe just talk us through the first one you did, which I remember was the 100K, wasn't it?
Yes.
So what was that like? We've both done a lot of runs on the West Highland Way. I've never done a loop course like that. I went to watch and saw some of it. How did you find that in comparison to doing an A to B sort of route?
Well, the first race I did, as you said, was in 2011, was the Anglo-Celtic Fleet 100K. First time I was selected to run for Scotland, which was a fabulous, fabulous thing to do. I was absolutely petrified. First of all, pulling on a vest, feeling completely out of my depth, running against girls who would easily pull out sub 3 marathons. So I was pretty terrified. What can I say about the race? It was awful. It was fine. It was a 1.5 mile loop, 42 of them, I think, was around about. And it was fine for the first 30. And then I think the loops get a bit frustrating, and it was a really nice day, and there was loads of families out. I think if I'd have finished 35 loops, I'd have probably finished in a high, but the last few laps, the wheels started to come off. But I finished, and I never thought for a minute I would get under 9 hours, and I finished 9:03. And I think if I'd have thought a bit about timing. I might have got under 9 hours, but I did it. Yeah. I was broken. I was absolutely broken afterwards. I remember getting in the car and it was awful and having to hold on to everything for a couple of days. But
in a sense, do you feel that's with the with the mountain routes, you've got a bit of a break, haven't you? You've got a walking break, you've got downhill using different muscles. Did you feel that you were using the same muscle groups all the time and that was the difference?
Yeah, I think that was probably the thing that scared me the most, because I'd never done anything long on the road. Yeah. It's always been, I've ran the same sort of time, but it's always been off-road and you can walk up a hill and you can have a sandwich and take a picture and all the things you're supposed to do when you're out running that kind of distance. But it was the same muscles. I mean, my calves were a mess. Yeah. And I found I was cramping, and it's just really hard going on the tarmac on your muscles, and it's not something that I'd ever done before. So I think the fact that I was so uptight before the race started didn't help my situation at all.
Yeah. Well, it was a great performance. And then just 5 or 6 weeks later, you did the fling.
Four
weeks later, makes me feel even better now. And I remember thinking, oh, this is my chance. This is surely my chance. And I remember we got to Rowadennan and you caught me up, and then you just took off after that.
You didn't forget what happened at the start.
What happened to the start?
When we got to Mulgai and I turned my back to you and went, watch this, John, this is what you're going to see all day.
Yeah, and I'm used to seeing your back.
I didn't believe that for a minute. I didn't think it would be that easy.
No, thanks. So that was a good race. What was your feeling about that one? You finished 9 hours...
9:13, 9-ish, I think it was just under that. It was great. I think it was just really nice to be back on the trails. I hadn't done anything really long or strenuous since the 100k 4 weeks prior, so I think I just went out with no pressure and just see how it goes. And Marco had put together some new splits which had me going into Drimmen about 5-10 minutes slower than probably even longer than that the year before, and I wasn't sure to trust them, but it kind of all came together in a day, and I started really, really conservatively, and I just started. I don't know what position I was when I got to Balmaha, maybe 10th or something female, and I just started passing people who were falling apart, and some people were.
Including me.
Including you. But you weren't falling apart. You were just letting me pass. And I got to Benglass, and I think I was second when I got to Benglass. And it was fine up until that point, and then it was really warm last year. I think I really kind of struggled in the heat. But it was a good race. I finished second, and I think that was the UK Championships as well. So that was a good race. It was a good race. But there was a girl who came in third, Heather, who was actually even more conservative than me, because I'd not even seen her all day. And I think she took about 10 minutes on me on the last section, so a couple of miles longer she would have had me.
And it was from that Montaigne picked you up, is that right?
Yeah, I think they took sympathy on me. Montaigne were the sponsor at the time, and the chap Paul from Montaigne had emailed me that week of the race and asked me if I wanted some nice new shiny gear to congratulate me on my performance. And then a couple of months later, they asked me to be their first sponsored ultra running female. So that was a huge privilege. So now I get some nice mountain gear.
And you get a nice little logo on your blog, so that's good.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, so after that then, I don't think you did any of the races before the West Ham Way, did you? Did you ever just train?
The West, obviously the Fling was in April, and then, I just did concentrated in getting back on the trails, because the first quarter had been spent frantic training, panic training for the 100K. So, I just spent a couple of weekends doing some sort of long back-to-backs on the West Ham Way and tried to prepare for that.
And again, so that would be the third time you've done it. You've gone from 30 hours to 20:58. And I know, obviously, 20 was in your mind, wasn't it? Getting under sub-20. And again, you're just a superb run. Again, just talk us through a little bit how it went from your perspective on that race.
The race, just everything just fell into place that day. I started off my usual, just ticking over, and it was really wet that day. It was awful, but there was a can't think of anything that went terribly wrong. I made huge schoolgirl error of putting lock laces in my trail shoes, which I thought was great because I do like wearing these lock laces, the elasticated laces, because I feel that they're much more comfortable, and sometimes tight laces and stuff can actually hurt my feet. So I thought it would be a genius idea to put these lock laces in my trail shoes.
You haven't tried it before?
No, not tried them before. For anyone listening, don't do it for a trail race because when you're going downhill and your feet are wet and you've got these lock laces, your feet move about so much inside your shoes. And I like a good half inch on my shoes to allow for swelling. So coming off a devil staircase was a bit painful because my toes were bashing in the front of my shoes, and it really came down to the fact that I had to put lock laces in my shoes. So there, apart from that, and the usual aches and pains going across Larrig Muir, but I cooked up with a guy called Adam from King Lochleven. He was coming out of King Lochleven eating a fish supper as I was heading in, and I caught up with him going up Larrig Muir, and he basically hooked onto me for the whole way. He was a really stubborn runner, you know, and I think the fact that he was probably a little worse than I was kind of gave me a bit of a boost because I was using my energies to gear him, and it was good because we ran all the way into Fort William together. I think he was desperately trying to shake me off or I was desperately trying to shake him off, but apart from it being a wet day, and it all came together, and I think I got 19, you'll probably know this better than me, 1939? Did I beat your time?
Oh, yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, yeah.
Really? I've never mentioned that.
Oh, no. I keep that quiet. Yeah, yeah. Now, my best is 1951, 59, so you were well inside, don't worry.
Oh, it's only minutes.
No, that was it. Again, a superb performance, and I think just that the year that I had, it just seemed to be getting better. And then I know you did the Clyde Stride, didn't you? Just a few weeks later.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think was probably... I think you wanted to get the sums, didn't you?
Yeah,
to get
I did
a few
it for
in.
The sums. Yeah, I will admit, I really was out for the points in that one.
Yeah.
It's a race that I didn't think I would ever do, to be honest, but then I did a few training runs on it, and it's actually a really nice route. I think I was expecting it to be more kind of cycle path, but it's quite a lot of it that's off road, and there's quite a lot of trails. And the second half of that race was considerably better than the first half, believe it or not. I just think I really wasn't ready to do the race, and I probably shouldn't have done it, but it was good. It was fine, and I think I came in second behind Lucy, which is the story of my life. I'm second to everything. And I just did that one for the points. But I really enjoyed it, and I would definitely go back and do it again. It was a great race.
Yeah. And then we came to the Devils, and I remember that one very well because I think I followed you for the first 20 miles to Glencoe.
Stalking I was.
And I was trying my new tactic of not wearing a watch.
And you're trying your new tactic,
that's right. But I think the thing that, honestly, Debs, when I watched you running close hand for two or three hours, I think your ability just to be able to set a pace and stay there is incredible. And I think it's one of your real strengths. So that, again, that was a super race, wasn't it? And you did well in that one.
I think that was probably one of my favourite races last year. I think from start to finish, I felt really good. And even some of the hills, I felt quite strong. And to be honest, even I didn't know where it was coming from, but I just think it was one of those races that came. It was probably my favourite race of last year.
Yeah.
And if I could feel that way on every race, it would be it'd be brilliant. It kind of came together that day. Yeah. Everything about it was just perfect for me.
Yeah. And what was your time for that one?
Not as fast as you! I know that's what you're going to get. I have no idea. It was under 7 hours because I really wanted to get under 7 hours.
Yeah.
And I think I was leaving Llandavra. I had an hour and 10 to play with, and I remember saying to Marco, I'm going to have to really work hard here. And I had Helen Lees on my tail, who was also been on my tail for most of the race. And I think I just hit the top of the hill going into King Fort William and absolutely flew it because I thought she was going to catch me. And I think it's one of the few times in races where I've had that real fierce competitiveness.
Usually
in long distance, where you're so far apart from other people that.
Yeah.
But it was a good race. It was good, and I didn't beat your time. Only because I stopped going into Fort William to sort my hair, and you know, I was going to have pictures, so I had to sort my hair and wipe the snotters from my face and then get ready for the final sprint. But no, it was a good day. It was a good day.
Well, it's very kind of you to leave me one time at the moment. That is
for now.
And then after that, not only doing a superb 100K, a great fling, superb West Highland Way, great Devils, and then you take on this 24-hour race. So tell us about that one.
Oh, yeah. That was the Commonwealth Ultra and Mountain Championships. I was lucky enough to be selected for the Scotland team again. Mainly because people aren't daft enough to do those kind of things. But, yeah, it was down in North Wales, and it was a 1K loop round a central reservation in a housing estate in North Wales, which to anyone else would sound like utter torture, but it was fabulous. It was great. It was a really, it's an amazing event. I mean, you know, you were there yourself. The atmosphere is good. It's really tough. I don't even think it was the laps, but for the last 4 hours, it was tough. Everything just gives up. But no, I was really pleased. I think I got just under 130 miles. I broke a Scottish record. But it was great. It was me, Sharon and Pauline, who were in the team, and Pauline Walker held the 100K, the 100 mile, 200K and the 24-hour Scottish record. And Sharon broke the 100 mile, I broke the 200K, and Pauline maintained her 24-hour record because we didn't quite match that. So it was really nice, and then the three of us, we won the bronze medal for the teams, so it was a great experience. I swore blind I would never do that again, and hey-ho, I've forgotten about that already.
Well, I must say, I've probably seen you finish a number of races afterwards, but I've never ever seen you as broken as that one.
Crying. At
the
end.
Well, I think just the physical and mental effort of finishing that race, you know, it was incredible to watch you and to see you keep going. And then I think once you'd finished, it was gone, wasn't it?
I don't think I've ever been in as much pain after a race in my life, other than probably the first West Highland Way race, and my legs were just, everything was a struggle. You know, poor Marco had to help me in and out the bath, and oh, it was just, my ankles and my calves had completely swollen, they were, but yeah, a week later it had all gone and I'd completely forgotten about it. And guess what, I wanted to do another one.
I know, that's right. And if you've ever seen the video that Marco took of you and Sharon going down the steps, going down the stairs to the restaurant, it's just, it's worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, that's it, the international athletes leaving the restaurant.
That's right.
Yeah, it was, I remember the day before I'd seen something in a shop that I wanted to get my mum to say thank you for looking after Karen, and it was only like half a mile down the road, and the next morning after the race I thought, I'm going to go and buy that, and it took me the best part of an hour to get there, but I got it. It was an experience and a half.
Definitely.
But I'd like to think now, I think with the more you do these kind of things, your body should become more kind of used to it, especially like the first West Ham we raced, my feet and my legs, I was absolutely a mess. Whereas last year, other than going up and down stairs, which were a bit of a challenge, I was generally okay. So I'm hoping that theory follows through.
Yeah, hope so. So you've been running 10 years, you've been running ultras for 4 or 5. Okay, so I think hopefully people listening to this are either just getting into it or have been involved for 2 or 3 years. If you had a chance to sort of say some of the things that you've learned, maybe about your training, about your strategy, maybe about nutrition, and what are the key things that you'd like to pass on to others?
I think with training, especially something like the West Ham Way, you cannot really beat going out and training on the route. If you can't for logistics, then find something similar. I think you need to train yourself to be able to go up the some of the ascents and some of the technical stuff like the lock side. Mm. If you're not used to running that, I think mentally it can be a bit of a struggle. But yeah, I think definitely getting out and simulating the terrain that you're going to be running on is a key thing to passing on in the race.
Mm.
What was the other question, sorry?
Things about pacing as well, and nutrition, food. And
yeah, I think the main thing I say to myself is not to get sucked in at the start. I always say to myself over and over again that I only can control what I'm doing. I can't control what other people are doing.
Mm.
You see people flying off at the start, just laugh and just think, I'm going to reel you in somewhere along the line, because, pacing at the start is key. I think in any sort of long distance race, you know, the people who are in the top 20 in the West Anglia race, by the time you get to Drimmen, are not necessarily the people who are going to be the top 20 by the time you get to Fort William. So I think it's just keep your breathing under control. It's a good, I don't go around with a heart rate monitor, or I only watch my pace really to Drimmen. I think once you get out of that, like using a watch to pace, I think as long as your breathing is, say, like a 5 or 6 out of 10 is what I usually go for, then you're fine. If you can't talk, you're going too fast.
Yeah.
If you can hear your breathing, you're going too fast. And I just keep telling myself that I can't control what other people are doing. Mm. I can only control what I do.
Mm.
So that's really it. It's all about pacing at the start.
Yeah. And what about food for you?
Anyone who's read my blog will know that I can survive on nothing. Food is a nightmare for me. It's a nightmare for my crew. I think last year I did the fling on 5 jelly babies, and it kind of shows towards the end. I find it really hard to eat. Even on training runs, I'm just, you know, I can go for hours without eating. Yeah, I would love to know what actually works for me. I try to kind of mix it up. I try to eat when I can. I'm getting better at it. Mm. I have to admit, I am getting better. I generally just go for the sweet stuff, and then I get sick of the sweet stuff. And
you love your Coke, don't you?
Coke is the crack cocaine of ultra running. Love Coke. And yeah, a lot of people make it all flat and water it down, but you know, sometimes you need a good belch. Let's be honest, there's nothing ladylike about ultra running, is there? You know, a bit of gas is good once your stomach gets a bit upset. I do love Coke, and I drink sports drinks as well. I love tablet, sweets, anything.
You have nothing savoury at all?
Have I ever had anything savoury? Not really, no. No, I do. I do make everything up. Yeah. Like, I could feed the 5,000 with what I take on a race, and the same I could feed 4,999 with what I take home. Although there's been a couple of training runs this year that I've been on where I just thought I could just murder some soup or a sandwich. But I just try to eat what I can, and I've fed so many birds along the lock side with these sandwiches that I leave from Rowardennan. I think anyone who knows my crew and the delightful Karen Ann, who will, she's not shy and at all by any stretch of the imagination. She was down at the bottom of the Devil's Staircase last year, effing and being and calling me all the silly bees under the world, and that I was going to bonk at the top and she wasn't coming to get me. And I think I wish I had a camera to see her chasing me along the bottom and me running away because I wouldn't eat.
Was it that time your support crew said, don't worry, and they ate it for you?
The lovely Emma and Jill were just so scared of Kaz giving me pelters, the wrath of Kaz, that they actually ate the sandwiches for me and told Kaz that they'd eaten, that I'd eaten them. But it was one of those, even after 70 odd miles, it was still hilarious watching Kaz running down the bottom swearing at me.
If you've not had a chance to read some of Deb's race reports, I thoroughly recommend them. They're on your blog, debsonrunning.blogspot.com, and they're really, really entertaining reads. Yeah, excellent.
Not for the faint-hearted.
No. Okay, so we've looked back a little bit, and we've thought about last year's race, some of the things you've learned. What are your plans for this year? I know you've done one race already, which you can tell us about, but what are your big plans for 2012?
After last year's race, although it really went together for me and I really, really enjoyed it. Like you, I'm taking a year out. I've not broke up with the West Highland Way. We're on a break.
Yeah.
So I had such a good race that I don't know if I could go and replicate that. I don't want to get to the stage where I'm going backwards. So this year I decided I was going to try something new and finished the West Highland Way last year and kind of had a wee look around the internet, see what's out there, what attracted my attention. And of all things, of all the most wonderful races across the world that's out there, I have signed up for a race in June, which is the Grand Union Canal Race, which is 145 miles on a flat canal from Birmingham to London. And I can't talk about that race without laughing, because it just, even in my head, it's like, what am I thinking? But yeah, so in preparation for that, I've just completed the Glasgow to Edinburgh Canal Race. And I really enjoyed that. It was great. Not so excited about doing three times that much in June. But yeah, I like the longer stuff. I think I do better in the longer stuff. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. Well, 5 weeks to go.
Well, we wish you all the best for that, and we'll certainly be following your progress as you run that one. And maybe just think, is that all you're doing then? You can't be just doing that.
For this year?
Yeah.
That's as far as I've got so far.
Right.
We'll see how things pan out thereafter.
Okay.
And I just thought as well, I think we've already touched on this a little bit about your ability to pace yourself. And you've talked a little bit about that. Was there anything else that you could share about the real strengths? It seems to me the longer the race, the better you become. And I don't know what your marathon time is, but I don't think it's that special, is it?
Yeah,
no, well, it's not, is it? From what your own what
no,
you
I
said.
No, I haven't done a marathon for since 2008.
Right, so it could well be a lot faster if you did one now.
I'd like to think that, but at the end of the day, that's my marathon time. It was 2:31, which I did. Sorry, 3:31, which I did in London in 2008. With regards to pacing, I think it comes down to the fact that I can't actually run that fast in the first place. So I think these people that go flying off, I couldn't match it anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I said, I think it just comes down to controlling your own effort levels and trying not to get too wound up in what's happening around about you. I think being a girl helps, because we don't have that whole fierce competitive thing that some guys have. And
you're pretty competitive.
I think, but not at the first stages.
There's no
point. The race doesn't start until you're halfway there at least. I mean, I think in any race I've ever done, other than the first West Highland race, I don't recall ever being overtaken in the second half of a race. In any race.
That's incredible.
And I just, it really just boils down to what you do at the start.
Yeah.
That's going to make or break you.
Yeah.
The time you get to Balmaha, that will make or break you. I know I listened to one of your podcasts the other day when you were talking about, you know, going down into Balmaha from Connachill. Mm. And yeah, I think if you, it's a natural thing, you're going downhill, therefore you catch up in time, but that will kill you if you go. I mean, you've seen this, you put together the stats of people that were flying ahead of you going into Balmaha, and you overtake them. Just walking the hills is a good thing as well, or speed hiking the hills. There's been races where I've come up against people and I'm walking behind them and they're running up the hill and you're just going the same pace.
Yeah.
But I think I'm digressing. What was the question again?
I think it's just really, really important. I remember Colin Montgomery once, the other golfer.
Yeah.
He was talking that if he could caddy for an average golfer, he could take 5 or 10 shots off their score just by using his head and telling them what club to use. And I honestly think if you ran with 90% of the runners, they would run a better time if they followed your strategy. You know, I think it's one of your strengths. And certainly for me, I said this to you, for my Lakeland race, I want to do a Debs. I seriously mean it, because I think that's the ability you have to be able to set off so comfortably and then maintain that. I've seen it firsthand several times. And I think you've got a lot, you know, if people adopted that strategy, I think they'd have better runs and do a lot better. So I think
I think it all comes down to what happens at the beginning. It really does. That will, especially in the West Highland Way, the first, till you get to Rowardennan at least, that'll make or break you.
Yeah.
And then once you have, don't start racing. If you're racing with someone, don't start racing till you're at least a Bridge of Orkney.
Yeah.
you need to get there feeling fit. And the only way you're going to get there with something in the tank is if you just don't empty the tank in the first. I think there's so many people who have gone off and started. It's so easy to go off and you think, I'm doing 10-minute miling, this is ridiculous, or I'm walking up a hill and I'm only 5 miles into it. But that is a difference between something you're capable of and just scraping yourself to Fort William.
Now, I wasn't going to ask this question, and we can cut this out if you don't want to, but I was thinking, you know, Stuart Mills, you read his stuff, you know, and his strategy is to go off as hard as you can for as long as you can, which would be the opposite of your strategy. So he would say, everyone gets tired after 5 hours, so why not be 10 miles further up the track, because we're all going to slow down as the track goes on. I say the opposite to what you've done.
It is complete reverse to what I do. But I always think, you know, each their own. There's so many people that do it. I was running with some guys in the Glasgow to Edinburgh race, and you know, they were saying, I'm going to stick at this pace for as long as I can, and then I'm going to walk, jog the last, you know, the second half. And I just don't know, I just wouldn't enjoy it. I think once you start emptying the tank, that's when I just don't want to be there. I would rather finish a race saying, do you know what, I enjoyed that, rather than finishing it and be completely dead from halfway on. I think my although he is maybe that's why Montaigne spoiled to both of us. It's kind of like it's a test.
Yeah.
Some kind of science experiment. It wouldn't work for me. It's not the way. But as I said, you know, Stuart has pulled out some great times. But I mean, I read his race report at the Fling last year when he'd kept on Jez Bragg's show. Was it last year? The year before?
Yeah,
last year. Basically, his tactic was just to stick with Jez Bragg for as long as possible. And yeah, I think he thinks, you know, you can go out and cover, if you're only going to last 5 hours without feeling, whether before you start feeling rough, then you may as well cover as many miles as possible. But yeah, it's completely opposite to what I think. I would rather just, I think going out and enjoying a race, I think if you enjoy a race, you're going to do a better time than if it's really, really tough.
Okay, thank you. I've got a couple of questions to finish with on this bit, and that is just some advice, I think, from your experience. And first of all, I want you to put yourself in someone's shoes who's doing the West Highland Way this year. That maybe they were aiming for 25, 26, 27 hours, whatever, but having a struggle, and end up at Kinlochleven with 14 miles to go and know it's going to be hard work, would be a lot easier to give up and not bother. What advice would you give to them? What would you like to inspire them with to keep going?
Giving up can be so easy. And they say that the West Highland Way is a race of two halves, and it's the first 80 miles and then the last 15. And anyone who's done that race will wholeheartedly agree with that. It doesn't last that long. Larrigmore is actually really pretty. I just think you've got to kind of switch off. You've really got to turn off the negative thoughts. You're always going to have bad patches, and if you're feeling bad coming out of Kinlochleven, you're pretty much going to feel bad the whole way. But I just kind of try and switch off, try and focus on scenery, anything, but getting to Fort William and hitting those doors at the leisure centre will be one of the best feelings you'll feel that year. And you've worked hard for it, you know, just don't give up. Everybody wants to give up. I don't think there's anyone who skips across Larrigmore unless you're bitchy. Nobody's got a good tale in Larrigmore. You're suffering, everyone's suffering. It's not, you're not a victim, you're not having any special pain that everyone else isn't having. Everyone feels rough on Larrigmore. Everyone feels Llandafra. I mean, I couldn't believe that people pulled out the Llandafra before I did the race. And I've, you know, you look at stats and people DNF'd at Kinlochleven and Llandafra, and I couldn't believe anyone could give up there. But doing the race, you know why people give up there, but it'll be over soon. And it's the best feeling in the world. And I think you've just got to remind yourself that you've worked really hard for this, and you're probably in the best shape that you're ever going to be in, regardless of how you feel at that point. But it's a great feeling. And once you get to that presentation the next day, and so they shout your name, it is amazing. Because I remember before I did the race, and everyone kept going on about these crystal goblets. And I'm like, what's a bloody goblet that's going to gather dust? But when you call your name and you go and get that goblet, it's really, really special. It's a special race, and just to be part of it is amazing.
It is.
And the thing is, if you do give up, you've got to come back next year, haven't you? So you might as well do it then.
Yeah, that's what I said the first year, wasn't it? I'm not going to give up because I never want to come back here ever again. No, I think it's an amazing feeling, and you have to remember that. I think there's the bit where you, after you come out of Braveheart car park, and there's that horrible tarmac bit, and I always really, really didn't like that. Any of the tarmac bits, when you get to Kinglake Leven and that horrible tarmac bit. And I remember Andy Cole saying sometime in his blog that when he gets to that point where he hits the road in, he just reflects on everything he's achieved, and, you know, really starts applauding himself, and he just thinks about everything positive. And I did that last year in the race and just sort of reflected on what I'd done that day. And it's just, I think it really is mind over matter. If you can stay positive and, there's no point bitching and whining and moaning because nobody's listening to you. I mean, once you're out there by yourself, you can bitch and whine all you like, but just kind of try to stay as positive as possible.
Yeah. Excellent. Great advice there. And then the second advice is, maybe for someone who's listening who has got a decent time, or maybe this is the first time, but they know they're capable of running around about 20 hours. I think that's a special mark, isn't it, to get under 20. What advice would you give for these last 8 or 9 weeks before the race? What tips would you like to pass on to someone who is aiming to do that sort of time?
I think one of the key things to actually running long is running fast during the week. I know there's quite a few people that sort of give up on speed training and focus on just long, slow miles, but I think I do two speed sessions a week. I say speed in the loosest term, effort sessions we'll call them. I've not known for running fast, but I think you really need to train your body to feel tired. You need to train your legs to push beyond what's normal. And it's easy to go out and run 9-10 minute miling across a nice pretty trail and stop for a picture, but it's not going to get you past 95 miles. I really, really see the benefit of doing some speed sessions. I think anyone who's looking to get under 20 hours really needs to take care on the first. I mean, I can't stress this enough. I think I got to Drimmen last year in about 2:05-ish. I think that's the kind of time that you'd be looking at. I know there was people that I was running with who were looking to, you know, just to break 26, 27 hours, and they were probably going too fast. And, it's each their own. It really is each their own, but that's just the way I plan my races.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Slow. Gets you fast.
That's right. But the thing is, I think that's, again, your strength of being able to start that like that and keep it going, you know, and it's, certainly the performance you put in last year was superb. Yeah. Okay, well done. And we certainly look forward to following your progress this year, particularly the Grand Canal. On the race day, will you be around the weekend for the West Harlem Way?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'll be the one sitting in King's House drunk. No, not at all. I'll definitely be out on race day. Yeah, I don't know in what capacity yet, but it'll be 3 weeks after my race, so hopefully I'll be able to go out and do some runs and cheer people on. But, I'll definitely be there,
Good.
Well, just to finish with, we've got our quickfire questions. And again, these are just your own personal preference of things that you do. So first of all, shoes, would you wear road or trail shoes? Think about the West Harlem Way particularly.
I have been known to mix it up. I think I would probably go with trail shoes, but not heavy ones. I know there's a lot of people go out with, I don't really know what weight they are, but you know, I've tried a few Asics ones and they are really heavy. So I like Innovate Rock Lights. I tend to do that. Sometimes when I get to Llandafra, I change my shoes into road shoes. I think just gives me a bit of a boost because you feel a bit lighter and it's a bit more bounce. But I would go with trail shoes, but as long as they're light, nothing too heavy.
Right.
Food. What favourite food have you got to keep you going on those tough times?
That's still a work in progress. I like sweets and tablet and junk food. I think the best thing about training for the West with running the West Highway race is when you go into Asda the day before and you get the looks from the cashier like, how can you be so small? And it's like all the crap of the day. And then you'll throw in something like a slim fast shake just to throw them off. Yeah, just rubbish, yeah. Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Are you a hydration pack or a water bottle girl?
Bit of both. I think for the... for races, I generally wear a Nathan bottle belt thing, which I think is really comfortable, and it's got a clip instead of Velcro, which I like. I train with a rucksack. I know for the canal race, I'm going to mix it up a bit, so I might reuse my rucksack during the night, give your waist a break, and then sometimes, you know, your shoulders get sore with a rucksack. So I think anyone who's doing this for the first time would probably just have both options available, but I would go with a bottle belt, I would.
Water or energy drink?
Water? energy drink. Energy drink and Coke.
Yeah. You don't drink water at all, do you?
I'm terrible for drinking water. It's awful. Yeah, I would go with the Lucozade and have different flavours, because last year I packed cherry and my support crew kept giving me cherry and I was like, oh God, anything but cherry, Lucozade. Yeah. So I think if you're using sports drink, have a few different flavours.
Yeah. Salt tablets?
Never tried them.
No.
No, I've never had real problems with cramp. I know last year when I did the 100K, I had real problems with my cramp in my calves, and the fling last year, my quads were on the cusp of going into spasms. But I think that was just because they were the first couple of days where it was warm. But no, I haven't really had problems with cramp so far, touch wood.
Good. Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or do you like to go without anything?
Oh, natural. Yeah. Well, not for me. My feet don't work without my Garmin. It's a terrible, terrible... I don't actually really pay much attention to it, to be honest. I have an idea of where I want to be at a certain time, but I try not to get too bogged down with it. But yeah, I do like running with a Garmin. Yeah. And I think it's more of a habit now than a necessity.
Yeah.
But I love my Garmin.
Yeah. On some of those long races, you're not allowed to wear one, are you? The 24-hour?
I know you can in 24-hour. They changed the rules last year that any race above 24-hour, you can have a Garmin and an iPod.
Oh,
the little luxuries in life that we were allowed for rule bending. But for, I think, the shorter distances, you're still not allowed to have any kind of gadgets that might aid your performance.
Yeah. Okay, support crew for the West Highland Way, would you have one or two teams? What's your preference?
It really depends on how long you plan to stay out for.
Yeah.
If you want your crew to pass out on you. Last year I had Alison and Kaz, I think, helped me out during the night, and then they kind of swapped over. But as I said, what time did I finish up before? 10? 9?
Nine?
So I think if you're going into a second night, it's best to have options or a few people. I was quite lucky because I finished in daylight, and therefore you have crew that are willing to stay there. But again, it really depends on how long you want to be out for and how willing your crew are.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite section of the route?
Love the Lochside.
Mm.
I know I've been listening to the other podcasts that you have with other people, and I think you've got to learn to love the Lochside.
Mm.
It's beautiful, and I think people miss out on how magical it is. It's really, you're really isolated and you're out on your own, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Mm.
I think because I'm quite small and I naturally run with a short stride and a high cadence, so I like skipping over all the rocks, and I can't say I liked it very much when I first started doing it. But I think the more you do it, the more you know what's coming up, and now I just learned to love it now.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great section. I love it.
Yeah, good. Well done. Do you listen to music, podcasts, books, or do you like to run without anything in your ears?
Well, the last few weeks I've been running with you in my ears, John. I train when I'm running by myself on the roads, and I do run with an iPod. I have music, I have radio, I have podcasts, I have books, anything. Mm. I don't think I've ever listened to music on the West Highway, even on training runs. I don't think, I've always had it with me, and I think the West Ham is really magical, yeah. And there's
and also
so
you're
much...
normally with people, aren't you?
Yeah, and they don't really bore me that much, no. So I have to tune in. but I don't think I think there's a couple of sections that I've ran on the West Ham Way with music. Last year, I picked up my iPod at Victoria Bridge and I went across Rannoch Moor with some, and that really actually gave me a boost. I think it was really miserable on Rannoch Moor, and just switching off just for that section, it did give me a little boost. But yeah, or you could be like Mark Casey and he just sings to himself.
Have you got a favourite mantra that keeps you going?
A couple of years ago I read a book, I think it was The Competitive Runner's Guide or something, and there was a section in that about, you know, mental strength, and one of the bits where he says you tell yourself that you are a warrior, and I remember reading this before I did the West Ham Way in 2010, and I made the mistake of writing in my blog that I was saying over and over again as I was coming into Kinnickley that I am a warrior, and of course I made the mistake of blogging that. And Peter Duggan has never, ever let that lie. I think last year when I was coming into King Cleveland on the Devil's Race, when I'd fallen, I fell going full pelt into King Cleveland and rolled and ended up like practically dangling on my shoulder at one point. And I was going into King Cleveland and I was crying, blood pouring from me, and I was like traumatised and winded. And Peter Duggan appears behind a wall and he's going, "Debs! You are a warrior!" And I was like, I don't feel like a warrior. But yeah, I don't think I've used that one since.
Right.
But yeah, I do. I find something and I just try to repeat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. But yeah, it's good. I think it's good to switch off as well.
Yeah. What thing do you look forward to most once you've finished the West Highland Way or any big long race?
To phone you and tell you I've got your time. No, a bath. Always a bath.
Yeah.
Usually assistance is required. But yeah, I don't tend to change my gear, and it's needs to be quarantined when I've finished. But yeah, I do like a bath.
Yeah.
I always like the idea of having a beer, but it's never quite as good as the thought of having a beer. But yeah, a bath's good.
Yeah.
And finally, what final tip would you want to leave for other runners?
Pacing.
Pacing
is key.
Yeah.
Manana. I just think the start is the key. Just ignore everyone else. It's your race.
Yeah.
You can control yourself. You can't control anyone else.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. This was excellent. It lived up to my expectations.
And I didn't swear once.
Well, once or twice.
Bloody's not a swear word.
Oh, isn't it? Okay. But that was great. And we wish you all the best for 2012 and years
thank
to come.
Thank you.
And your legions of fans will be following your progress.
Thank you. So beautiful and above all, just to see the fuse get lit this time, to light a real bonfire for all time. And what a beautiful day. Impossible in my all-powerful mind.
Well, it's good to have Colin with us again for our third interview, looking at Colin's progress and training for the West Highland Way Race. Our last interview was 6 weeks ago, so Colin, maybe you could just give us just a little bit of a rundown of what you've done in the last 6 weeks, training-wise.
6 weeks have gone by really, really quickly. It's the D33, I think, was the just before it was the last time we spoke. So it's been and gone. Went really well.
Yeah.
I tried my best not to use it as a race as such, but to try and use it as a prep for the full West Highland Way. But I managed to get a PB in that, so it was 20 minutes quicker than my previous time, which went really well. Since that, it's been a mixture of sort of local running up in the Glenifer Braes and running the West Highland Way. So far it's been a mixture of results. There are a couple of low points. Got a kick up the backside from Sandra and Fiona on Facebook about that, to get my act together again. But it's been really, really, really enjoyable. I've tried to focus more on pacing as well. That's been my major problem, is getting my pacing right. So most of the runs I've been doing, I've been on the West Highland Way. I've concentrated on the fling route the last couple of weeks. with it being the first race that's coming up. So rather than me heading up the Kinlochleven, I thought I'll try and run on the route and get the miles in. But it's been good. Most of the runs I've been doing about 20 miles or so. I've tried not to do anything longer than that just now. The D33 was a long race for last month, and this month it's a fling. So it's really just been about pounding miles out. I've worked as well on nutrition as well during my longer runs. I've taken advice from Karen Donoghue, who gave me a wee bit of a row at the D33, and she was kind enough to follow up with an email with some advice, which she's found in the past has helped her.
Good.
So I've taken that on board as well. Also, I've taken on some advice about hydration as well, the various different tablets and drinks that you can use. Mm. I've tried a few of them out on my long runs as well. But no, it's I've really enjoyed the last few weeks. It's just a shame it has gone in as quick as it has.
Yeah.
But no, I think everything's in place. And obviously the next thing's now is the fling in a couple of days' time. So hopefully things will fall into place during that race as well.
Yeah. What about speed work? Have you done much work on your speed?
Speed work, I don't really concentrate on speed as such. The last couple of years I've been swaying more towards these longer events now. It used to be when I started, it was 10Ks and half marathons, and I would concentrate a lot on speed then. I was interested in some of the blogs that I've been written recently, speed work. I did do a 3.5 mile hill race last week down in Fairley, which was the first short race I've done now in, I think, about 6 months. And it was quite interesting to see how I coped over that shorter distance. But speed work, it's got its place, but it's not something which I concentrate a lot on. I'd rather do this at a longer runs and take my time. I mean, I might go back to 10Ks later on in the year, but at the moment it's more the sort of longer, slower pace I'm looking at.
Right.
But same being.
Okay, so obviously, I would say, one of the highlights was your D33 over the last few weeks in the runs. As you look back over the last 6 weeks, what are the main lessons that you feel you've really sort of nailed as you're thinking about the full race in regard to your pacing, your gear, your food? You mentioned a little bit. Can you be a bit more specific about maybe some of the lessons you've learned over these few weeks?
I think in the past I've been tied up with looking at the distance, whereas now I just want to get out there and run and enjoy it rather than worrying all the time about how far I've run and how far there is to go, how I'm doing. I just like to get out there now and run. If I've got a day off, I know I've got a full day to go out there and just get on with it. Whether I walk, maybe half it, that's fine, as long as I enjoy myself. I've learned a lot about nutrition. It's been something I've suffered from in the past, eating rubbish and not really looking after myself properly during the day, as well as the couple of days before it as well. Maybe I haven't done the carb loading properly, relied too much on food I've enjoyed rather than food I should be eating, which again, Karen was good at. It was good at telling me what sort of things she finds are useful, and it's been messing around with those sort of things. Other lessons learned, it's the pacing. It's always been that issue with me. I've always started out too quick and then suffered in the past towards the end. And I want to get it right. It's important to get that right for the full West Highland Way race.
Yeah.
I don't want to get to the Tyne or Bidjorky and the tank's empty. So it's one of these things, as you're always saying, you start off steady and it's just the speed isn't important. It's the finishing that's a big thing for me, is getting to the end of this. The time, I do have time targets for the full race, but end of the day, getting the goblet and hitting the doors at the end, that's an important thing for me.
Excellent. So it's now Wednesday night, and as you say, the fling is just a couple of days away. Now, this is your fifth time?
Yeah, that's the fourth one.
Fourth one, okay. So maybe just tell us a little bit about how the other three went and how you found the fling.
The fling for me started in 2009. It was my second ultra. The first one had been a D33, and I thought, oh, it looks quite a challenge. The first year it went reasonably well. The fling's changed over the last few years with times, start groups, and so on. The first year it was, I think, they finished in 13.5 hours, and I did that. It was for a charity I ran for that one, and it was important that for myself that I got to the end. Because it was an end result, if people give me money for a good cause, so I knew I had to push myself for that. The following year, I'd learned quite a lot from the first year as regards my abilities, my limitations, and what worked for me. So the training was a lot harder for the second year, and I took, I think it was nearly half an hour off the previous year.
Yeah, so the next year, as I say, it was the an hour was cut off, so that gave me the incentive to do a lot better. I had to make sure I finish under 13 hours, so it was a really, really enjoyable day that day as well. I got to know a lot more people as well, the various people now that I know quite well. It was good to get advice from them as well for the second year. The third year, last year, was a bit of a disaster for myself. I thought the preparation had gone really well. I'd been doing a lot less races, so I wasn't going to be as tired in the lead up to it. But unfortunately, the weather that day was... I'm not really a sun worshipper. I don't do well running in the heat, and the conditions last year really were bad for myself. I hadn't hydrated myself properly. My salt intake was rubbish. I suffered on the loch side. I had a wee bit of a comeback towards Ben Glass, but when I got to Ben Glass and I sat down, I was nearly not getting back up again. I saw a lot of people dropping out at Ben Glass as well, and it was a struggle to get back up. But I ploughed on. But by the time I got to Bogle Glen, I was done in, really done in. And I was angry with myself walking up the hill, because I knew it wasn't that far to go, but I knew if I'd carried on to the end, I would end up doing myself serious damage. Mm. And that was the first ever race I've ever had to withdraw, which was even more annoying. And since then, I've run from where I gave up to the end and realised just how close I was, but I knew the speed I was going at and the state I was in, the best thing I could have done last year was just to say, just walk away, come back another year. Yeah. But the Fling's always been that first race that I've penciled in my calendar for each year. It just draws you back every year. Yeah. It's been a brilliant, well-organised race. It's going through changes this year with the change of the race director and some other changes, but from what I've heard, the guy's a really good guy, and I'm pretty sure he's going to take this event to the next level as well. Yeah. And again, it's the entry seems to come through the roof this year. I mean, I think it's just short of 500. When I ran it the first year, I think they were just touching 100 people on it. It just seems to have gone crazy. Yeah. But that's true all the ultra races.
It is.
The D33s was the same this year. Yeah. It almost doubled from last year. So it's a great race, and it's great people, and it's always been well organised. Yeah. And it's the course is just fantastic, scenery wise. So. Yeah. Hopefully the people doing it for the first time this year will feel the same way about it that I do now.
Yeah. And obviously, by the time this podcast goes out next week, you'll have done the race. And I'm hoping, actually, that I'll maybe catch up with you at the end of the race, and you can just give us a little update on how the race went for you. I was interested to know, Colin, how you're approaching the Fling this year. I think in the past when you've done it, it was one of the main races you were doing probably the year. And whereas this year it's slightly different, isn't it, in the sense that you've seen it as a build-up to the full race. So how are you approaching it? I think there's different ways. I've talked to different people who've done both. Some people treat it as a full race in its own right and race it as hard as they can and look for a great time. Other people on the other extreme say, no, I'm going to do this as if I'm doing the West Harlem Way. And so I want to get to Tyndrum feeling as though I could do another 42 miles. And then obviously there's probably a number of people in between those two extremes, as it were. So as you approach the Fling, what's your feeling? Are you going to be pushing this hard, looking for a PB? Or are you looking at it, well, I want to make sure I finish feeling pretty comfortable that I could do another 40-odd miles?
I think if I'd been asked that question probably back in November when I first filled in the application for the West Highland Way, I would have said it was just to use it as a training run, just to finish within the 14-hour limit that I've got this year. But it's a fantastic race and I want to do it justice, but I do want to do a PB on it. Last year I was really annoyed because I was on target to knock about an hour off my previous time. When I got to Ben Glass, I was still up on my previous years. And this is one of these races that's unfinished from last year. I want to do well, but I'm not going to be daft. I'm not going to try and risk an injury. If I feel I'm going too quick and I will slow down. Finishing is the important thing. I know that really well. I know where I can push. I know where I can slow down, take it easy. Again, this depends on the weather, really. If the weather's as bad as, well, as good as last year, I should say, I'll take it easy. But no, I'd like to do a PB. I'd like to try and get as close to 12 hours as I can. I know I'm never going to be massively quick on these big long races, but I want to do the best that I can. You know, it's 8 weeks to the West Highland Way, so I don't think there's any problems there with me to push myself. I've always managed to recover fairly quick from the longer races. Probably because I'm not really going that quick anyway, but I think just to enjoy myself in this race. You always meet people, you know, who run at the same pace as you on these events, so it's good to run with somebody. It passes the time quickly, so I'd like to get a PB, but I'm not going to be silly and you know, really go hammer and tongs right from the start. So, but as I say, we'll see how it goes during the day.
Good.
So this year you'll be on the 7 o'clock start, will you?
Yeah.
So it'll be quite good because I think you'll have people ahead of you that you'll be catching, and then you'll have people behind you that will be catching you.
Yeah.
So you'll even, you know, obviously you'll have people running at your pace, but also people ahead and behind you. So that would be interesting as well. But as I say, I'll try and catch up at Tyndrum, and we'll get a quick update, and we can add this into the podcast of how you got on. So as you say, it's 8 weeks on Saturday, it's the full race. So what are your plans maybe for the next 4 or 5 weeks? We'll try and do another one between now and the full race and get your thoughts with a few weeks to go. But what are your plans training-wise between now and the race?
Well, between the Fling and the West Highland Way race, I've got the Cataran to do, which I did that last year as well. It's a brilliant race. It's another 50-odd miles, 55 miles, I think it is. I'll probably be taking it a lot easier than it will be this weekend because there's only 4 weeks between that and the Fling, but I enjoyed the Cataran last year. I didn't find myself struggling at any point. The Cataran kind of rescued my year last year because I had two really bad ultra races, the Glasgow to Edinburgh followed by the Fling last year, and I felt terrible after that and I thought I'm just going to give up. But the Cataran kind of rescued me, pulled me back. So it's a really good race and I enjoyed the route. I'm also planning on doing the Sky Half marathon. I did that as well last year and really enjoyed it. Again, it's 3 weeks before. I'm going to combine it with some hill walking as well anyway. So I was planning to go up anyway, so it's a good race. I'll do that. And after the Fling, I'll probably concentrate any West Highland Way training runs on the upper half, try and do the northern half. I really enjoy the section between Bridge of Orkney and the ski centre. It's probably my favourite section of the whole route. I've done it a few times now, but I think doing the double staircase is going to be the sort of main emphasis. I want to get my leg strength up for the hill sections and also the Lanigmore as well. My parents have already offered to ferry me up and drop me off and pick me up at the end, so I'll probably do from Kinlochleven to Fort William a few times. I'm going to try and run on that. I want to try and run it on not so much tired legs, but try and maybe do both ways. So maybe run from Kinlochleven, so run from Fort William to Kinlochleven, and then the other way, and try and run in fatigued legs. Because by that time in the race, I'm pretty much sure I'll be knackered. But no, just to keep the momentum up, keep the miles up. There won't be any major long training runs because I'm using these next two races as my big runs. But no, I'm looking forward to it. It's the reality setting in now. Now it's only 8 weeks away. And there's still quite a lot of preparation to do to sort out, you know, with support team, what I'm actually planning to do in the day, to sort out what, you know, what kind of food I'm going to be eating on the day as well. I'll see what works between now and then in the two races I've got, and maybe try out some new stuff as well. But I'm sure we always have conversations with people when you're out running, what works for them, and try and swap ideas. So it's always good to do that. But no, I can't wait.
Yeah.
You know, it's anticipation. I think it's you want it to hurry up and come, but at the same time, your intimidation as well is setting in. You know, it's a big event, and one I think I'll have to show the most respect towards.
Yeah.
But no, it's bring it on, really.
Good.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Colin, and we wish you all the best on Saturday and for the next few weeks. And I say we'll have one more before the big day. Okay.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Lots of great lessons from Debs and from Colin. And as I said, I'll do some more over the weekend, and we'll put another podcast out sometime next week, which will have a bit of an update on the fling, and find out more about that as well. So I hope you've enjoyed this, and remember, slow and steady wins the race. So I got a paper bag, but you got the one with all the holes. And what a beautiful time.